Usually, when we consider how art responds to extreme horror or, systemic chaos, we kind of anticipate noise. Like, we are conditioned to expect this really loud, visceral aesthetic.
Right, like blaring alarms or shattered glass,
Yeah.
raw, gruesome imagery.
Exactly. We expect the artist to basically grab us by the lapels and shake us, using shock to forcefully awaken our sensibilities to all these harsh realities.
Yeah, there is definitely this prevailing assumption in contemporary art that the response to a dramatic, violent world has to be equally dramatic. You know, you have to meet aggression with an aesthetic aggression of your own just to be heard over the noise.
But what if that entire approach is, well, fundamentally flawed? What if the most radical disruptive response to a violently chaotic world isn't to scream back at it, but to meticulously construct an image of absolute unflinching calm?
It is a fascinating paradox because it completely redefines the mechanics of protest, really.
Yeah.
It suggests that choosing not to participate in the chaos is in itself a profound act of resistance.
Welcome to today's deep dive, where we are going to explore that exact paradox. We are examining a watercolor painting titled Incitation, or Incitation, by the artist Jairo Duque.
Which is such a brilliant
Oh,
piece.
it really is. And this specific piece operates as a pivotal moment within his broader book, Trastio. So our objective for you today is to decode how this seemingly straightforward, serene scene of surfers waiting for a wave at sunset secretly functions as a brutal ethical declaration.
A decoration against violence, essentially.
Right. We are pulling from a reproduction of the artwork, some highly detailed technical specifications of the materials used, and importantly, the artist's own critical notes on his creative philosophy.
And to really understand the philosophy of this piece, we cannot separate the image from the physical materials that brought it into existence.
Yeah, the physical foundation is huge here.
It is. The material choices dictate the behavior of the paint, which in turn literally dictates the psychology of the viewer.
The technical specifications are actually genuinely intense for what we, typically assume is a delicate medium. Like, we are talking about a piece painted on Arches cold press paper, measuring 22 by 15 inches.
Right.
But the crucial detail is the weight. It's 640 grams. Okay, let's unpack this. Because working with 640 gram watercolor paper feels less like handling stationery and more like, I don't know, trying to paint on a piece of rigid butch wood.
Oh, for sure. It's basically cardboard.
Yeah, it has this highly textured, very coarse grain, and it actively fights back against the water. It's like the foundation of a fortress or a retaining wall.
And that physical resistance is exactly why an artist chooses it, because standard watercolor paper buckles, right? It warps when introduced to heavy moisture.
Right, it's all wavy.
Exactly. But a 640 gram sheet absorbs immense amounts of water while remaining architecturally stable. And that stability is necessary because Duque uses Daniel Smith
Which
watercolors.
are unique, right?
Very. They are formulated with mineral pigments that actively granulate.
So rather than the paint just like sitting smoothly on the surface, there is an actual physical separation happening on the paper.
Correct. The water essentially acts as a transport system. Because these specific pigments contain heavy, microscopic mineral particles, gravity literally pulls them down.
Into the paper.
Yeah, into the deep, coarse valleys of that heavy paper as the water evaporates. It creates this highly organic, almost geological texture. The artist is not entirely in control here.
Wow.
The water, the gravity, and the grain of the paper are all collaborating to determine where the pigment ultimately rests.
So the material itself is dictating the breadth of the painting, which actually makes the origin of the image so surprising to me. Because according to his notes, the base reference for this incredibly organic breathing watercolor was just a cold, anonymous digital photograph pulled from the internet.
Yes, a generic internet file.
It was essentially a synthetic JPEG. Yet, when this piece was exhibited at the ArtBox Project Expo Basel in Miami, back in June 2024, it possessed this incredibly profound living soul. So how does an artist bridge that gap? I mean, how do you force a generic internet file to feel organically alive?
Well, you pass it through a highly specific geographical and personal filter. In his notes, Duque places significant emphasis on the location of his studio in Whittier, California.
Okay.
He operates on this principle that the environment where creation happens is never neutral. It acts as an active participant.
Right. It's the idea that the light you wake up to, the air density, the local culture.
It all seeps in.
Exactly. All of that seeps in your muscle memory.
Yeah. And Southern California has a very distinct marine layer, a really specific quality of golden, diffused light, and obviously a deep historical relationship with the ocean.
Oh, absolutely.
So Duke takes this synthetic, placeless digital file and processes it through the physical reality of his Whittier studio. He filters the image through what he terms his ethic of life.
So the California environment acts as this invisible collaborator. The heavy architectural paper and those granulating Californian pigments. They demand a very specific, almost surrendered approach from the artist. Like, you cannot micromanage those materials.
You really can't. Because the heavy paper and the granulating pigment create such an unpredictable surface texture, the artist actually has to counter that material chaos.
Also.
With intense structural discipline. He anchors the entire piece using very deliberate, minimalist compositional choices. He focuses heavily on what he describes as a serene horizontality.
Right. The horizon line is dropped incredibly low in the composition.
Yeah.
The entire space is anchored by this pier structure featuring these silhouetted palapas against the sky.
Yeah, the straw huts.
Exactly. And everything is just tethered to that singular flat axis.
Notice what isn't there, though.
Yeah.
There are no converging orthogonal lines pulling your eye violently toward a vanishing point.
Yeah, that's true.
There are no sharp dynamic angles meant to manufacture visual tension. The piece is overwhelmingly flat and stable.
Yeah.
And that actually triggers a very specific biological response in the viewer.
Because our brains don't just passively look at geometry, right? We process it as environmental data.
Yes. From an evolutionary psychology perspective, the human brain is literally hardwired to associate flat, continuous horizontal lines with safety.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Right. When our ancestors stood in environments with flat, open horizons, it meant they could see vast distances. It meant predators couldn't hide nearby.
It signaled a safe space to rest.
Exactly. Consequently, when you look at a horizontally dominant composition like Incitation, it bypasses your critical brain and speaks directly to your nervous system.
Wow.
It literally lowers your cognitive load, reducing your heart rate, and inducing this parasympathetic meditative state.
But looking closely at the technique here, there is something that feels almost counterintuitive to that idea of complete ease.
Yeah.
Because Duke utilizes something called synthetic drawing, right?
He does.
It is a radical economy of line. Like, he captures the curve of the surfboards, the leaning palm trees, the backlit postures of the surfers, but he completely strips away all anatomical detail.
All of it.
There are no facial features, no specific expressions, no distinct clothing. So I have to ask, as a bit of a pushback, if the goal is to create a profound, organic connection with a viewer, doesn't omitting all that human detail risk making the piece feel like an unfinished study? I mean, doesn't the brain have to work harder to fill in those missing blanks?
That is a completely natural assumption. You know, that detail equals depth. But in this specific context, hyper detail would actually destroy the connection.
Really? How so?
The omission of specific anatomical traits is a highly intentional psychological tool. The moment you paint a highly detailed face, you create a specific narrative.
Right. If there is a detailed face, I am looking at a portrait of a specific stranger. I'm locked out of their personal experience.
Obviously, specificity forces you into the role of an observer. But by reducing the figures to pure silhouettes and gestures, they cease to be individuals.
They become universal.
Yes, universal symbols. They operate as avatars of youth and movement. And because there is no specific identity assigned to them, you, the viewer, are given the space to project yourself into that silhouette. You are actively invited to become the avatar waiting in the water.
Oh, wow. That makes the lack of detail incredibly inclusive, rather than just some aesthetic shortcut.
Furthermore, there is a mechanical reason regarding the visual rhythm of the piece. The water in the painting acts as a perfect mirror, reflecting the scene above it.
Yeah, it's very glassy.
Right. And this mirroring creates a rhythmic repetition, like a visual musicality. In visual theory, fine details function like high-frequency noise. So if the artist had cluttered the scene with, say, intricate textures on the water or specific anatomical shading on the surfers, it would have totally disrupted that slow, sweeping rhythm.
The visual music would turn into static. And that same restraint is really obvious in the color palette. Because when you hear California sunset or, you know, consider that this piece was exhibited in Miami, the immediate expectation is a hypersaturated fluorescent palette.
Neon pinks, hot oranges.
Exactly, the kind of colors you see on those cheap tourist postcards. But this piece actively rejects that chromatic drama.
He deliberately avoids those synthetic touristy effects because they demand way too much energy from the viewer. They are loud.
Instead, the palette relies on very contained ochres. The pinks are incredibly soft, blending almost imperceptibly into the brown tones of the water. And going back to the materials, because he is utilizing watercolor on that heavy arches paper, he allows the literal white of the paper to remain unpainted at the edges.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah, letting the composition literally breathe. It captures that specific, muted twilight atmosphere without relying on high contrast visual theatrics.
It really is an exercise in absolute masterful restraint. I mean, he is leveraging the physics of the heavy paper, the geology of the granulating pigment, the evolutionary biology of horizontal lines, the psychology of synthetic avatars, and a muted palette, all to engineer a sensation of unshakable peace.
It's a lot of moving parts for something so calm.
Right. But to fully grasp the radical nature of this calm, we have to pull back and look at the physical context where this image actually resides.
And this brings us to the book Trastio, because this painting is not just some standalone piece hanging in a vacuum. It is embedded within a broader narrative structure, and its placement within that sequence is where the entire dynamic pivots. It functions as a structural threshold.
This is arguably the most critical aspect of the deep dive. You have to put yourself in the position of the reader navigating the physical book of Trastio.
Right.
You have just spent time reading through a chapter that is thematically crushing. It deals with war, systemic violence, the depths of human horror, and death.
Heavy stuff.
Very. You are cognitively carrying the heavy, exhausting weight of that darkness.
The emotional frequency is incredibly dense. And then you physically turn the page, you cross the gutter of the book, and instantly you are confronted with this incredibly low horizon, the soft ochres, the universal avatars floating silently in the water.
Yes.
That transition is violent in its peacefulness.
Yeah.
The cognitive shock of going from textual descriptions of human destruction to a visual space of absolute zero tension is massive.
It forces a psychological whiplash. You are instantly transported from the absolute worst capabilities of humanity directly into a space of perfect horizontal serenity.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, though, because I have to play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
When you describe moving straight from chapters detailing systemic violence and war directly into a painting of a sunset, my immediate reaction is that this feels uncomfortably close to looking away. Like, doesn't the artist risk the accusation of pure aesthetic escapism?
Oh, absolutely.
It feels like saying, well, the world is burning and people are suffering, so I'm going to take my surfboard to the beach and just ignore it.
That is the natural critique of literally any art that focuses on beauty during times of crisis. But in his philosophical notes, Duke anticipates and explicitly dismantles that reading. This image is not designed as an evasion of reality. It is an affirmation of reality.
But how does a sunset affirm a reality filled with violence?
Because it affirms that violence is not the totality of existence.
Oh.
The artwork does not erase or deny the horror of the preceding chapter. Instead, it serves as a necessary contrast. Duke actually defines this painting as a luminous pause.
A luminous pause. I love that.
It operates as visual proof that despite being deeply wounded by war and systemic violence, the world remains a possible paradise. It insists that life still resides in simple, enduring gestures, like the act of waiting for a wave.
So if you only acknowledge the violence, you are essentially conceding the world to it. By aggressively planting a flag of beauty right next to the horror, the artist is refusing to let the horror dictate the entire narrative.
Precisely. If the ultimate objective of terror and systemic violence is to destroy hope, and, you know, convince you that the world is nothing but chaos, then simply insisting on the existence of beauty and actively protecting that beauty is a way of denying violence its ultimate victory.
That's incredibly powerful.
It is. By insisting that peace still exists, the act of surfing depicted in the painting transcends recreation. It takes on a defiant revolutionary meaning.
Which I think requires us to completely reevaluate the culture of surfing being depicted here.
Yeah.
Because the Whittier, California filter we discussed earlier, we are looking at a very specific relationship with the ocean. We really have to strip away the modern, commercialized, energy drink sponsored image of surfing as this manic extreme sport.
Exactly. Duke is executing a critical reading of surfing rooted in its origins within native territories, particularly the Californian context. In this framework, surfing is not about conquering nature or imposing human will onto the water.
Right.
It represents a perfect, synchronized conjunction with the environment. It is an act of total submission to the ocean's rules.
You cannot bully the ocean into giving you a wave.
No, you definitely can't.
You cannot rush the tide. It requires a brutal amount of patience, active physical listening, and a profound respect for forces vastly larger than yourself. It is about achieving a fleeting, perfect alignment between the sun, the sea, your body, and time.
And that concept of alignment brings us to the profound irony of the painting's title, Incitation, or Incitation.
Yeah, it is such a jarring title for an image of surfers at sunset. Like, when we hear the word incitation, our minds immediately go to aggression. We think of inciting a riot, provoking conflict, or sparking a violent uprising. It is a word inherently linked to agitation and noise.
Right, but Duke is performing a brilliant linguistic inversion here. The gesture of this painting is indeed an incitation, but he has flipped the target. Instead of inciting conflict, the artwork incites a healthy, peaceful life engaged in dialogue with the planet.
Wow.
It is an active provocation toward peace. And this kind of peace is not about sitting inertly in a state of apathy. It is a joyful, youthful, and physically engaged peace that actually demands participation in shared natural spaces.
That completely changes the vibe of the word.
Yeah. The artwork isn't trying to aggressively impose a militant worldview onto you. Instead, it subtly invites you in. It summons you to participate in that luminous pause.
That reframing feels incredibly urgent for you, listening to this right now, trying to navigate the realities of modern life.
Yeah.
Just think about the daily architecture of our existence.
It's exhausting.
It really is. We are constantly exposed to doom scrolling, unrelenting news cycles, highlighting global crises, manufactured political outrage, and just the relentless hum of daily stress. We are basically bombarded by the noise of a chaotic world demanding our anxiety. So choosing peace, choosing to deliberately protect your own psychological calm, is an act of rebellion against that noise. It transforms a quiet sunset from a cliche into a profound act of resistance. It's declaring, you know, I recognize the chaos, but I am choosing to anchor my energy in this quiet, beautiful reality.
It completely shifts the paradigm of what it means to push back.
Let's trace the incredible intellectual arc we've covered today. We started by examining a heavy 640-gram sheet of textured Arches paper sitting in a studio in Whittier, California, acting like a rigid piece of birchwood against granulating mineral pigments.
Right.
We saw how the artist took an anonymous synthetic digital file and filtered it through the light, the marine layer, and the historical culture of his specific environment to give it a living soul.
And then we unpacked the mechanics of the composition, how the biology of horizontal lines triggers our nervous system to lower our cognitive load.
Yeah, the evolutionary safety of it all.
Exactly. And how synthetic minimalist strokes turn specific characters into universal avatars we can literally inhabit.
And finally, we discover the contextual twist. How placing that deeply engineered, calming image immediately after a crushing chapter of war and death in the book Trastio transforms beauty into a radical act of human resistance.
It's brilliant sequencing.
This deep dive proves that redefining what it means to push back against a chaotic world doesn't always require raising your voice. You don't always have to shout or break glass to resist the darkness. Sometimes the most deafening rebellion you can muster is an unwavering, absolute calm. Thank you for joining us on this exploration, and we really encourage you to keep seeking out the profound meaning hidden within the quiet details.
Which leaves us with a final thought to carry forward into your own life.
Mm-hmm.
If the simple, non-aggressive act of patiently waiting for a wave at sunset can function as a radical, defiant act of resistance against a violent world, well, what are the overlooked breathing spaces currently hiding in your own daily routine? And how can you start treating those tiny, peaceful gestures as your own silent rebellion against the noise and chaos of the world?